My name is Michael Shao. I'm the author of A Story of Karma, Finding Love and Truth in the Lost Valley of the Himalaya. You can learn more about it at my website, www.michaelshao.com. That's MichaelShauch.com.
I was almost expecting it to be, I don't know if you're familiar with Lost Horizon. Have you ever read that?
You know, I haven't, but somebody else just said, this is, if you love Lost Horizon, you will love this book.
I think that that's accurate. Tell me the story. A friend showed you a photograph of a pyramid-shaped mountain, and that really changed your life.
I sat down with his friend. He'd been trekking throughout Nepal for 20 years, and he told us about this, the Lost Valley of Narfu. And it had just been opened up. Prior to that, it had been totally closed off to the outside world for generations. I was just totally smitten. I said, this is exactly the place that I'd love to go to. And then I came across this picture of the Pyramid Mountain. So my wife, Chantal, and I, we put together a little team. And so we thought, let's go in there and observe and learn from the people and just kind of capture a moment in time before things change too much.
And were you ever afraid because it was so remote?
Yeah, I mean, well, maybe sometimes ignorance is but we had a team of Sherpas. And I think still today you have to go into the valley with the guide, familiar with the area. So that kind of put my mind at ease as well.
There are a lot of tourists who take a certain path, and you split off from that path.
Yeah. Actually, you have to start on the Annapurna Circuit, which is start about a third of the way up. You end up branching off up this keyhole gap, and you would miss it if you didn't know it was there. It just looks like a kind of a fissure in the cliff. That's where we exited the Annapurna, and then we get into this lost valley. And as soon as we branched off, we spent about 8 hours trekking up to the first little settlement. It literally felt like we had stepped back into the 17th century. Stone houses, the way that they're dressed. I remember looking at my friends, where are we? Yeah. Where did we just walk into? And you have to imagine these towering 7,000 meter peaks all around you. And these people have been living the same way for the last 800 years. So it literally felt like we were kind of time travelers and we had just got back into a totally different era.
Chantal is tough, but the trip at one point really took a toll on her.
She's been getting, you know, kind of migraine attacks about 4 days in. There was no help around. There was one point where she was seriously debating whether she had to turn around. And that was right when we were into this place that I've dreamed about going since I was a teenager. Yeah, it was a very difficult thing because I thought, okay, well, there's no way I'm letting Chantal go down by herself. I'll turn around as well. Same time, I was thinking, you know, well, what does this mean for our whole team? What is, you know, I was going through my own internal kind of struggle. You want to go forward, but I'm not going to leave my wife. So I just thought, you know what, let's just keep moving slowly forward. You know, anyone who's had a migraine attack, you'll know that any sort of light or noise is not good for it. So Chantal, I mean, she's an amazingly strong woman and she just, you know, mentally strong. She just kind of managed to get herself to this little settlement where we were able to spend a couple of days. And that was where we started connecting with some of the locals. The magnificence of the mountains. We had this one beautiful night where, you know, I think it was the most beautiful starlit sky I have ever seen. Basically, a galaxy of stars around us was just lit up. And then some of the locals, as I said, were connecting with us. And I think all of these things together, you know, helped lift Chantal's spirit. And over those 2 days, she was able to get over this migraine attack. And then we were able to get on towards this other little settlement called Fu, which was our ultimate destination, the most remote village in this entire valley. And I remember her saying to me when we were passing through this gate, we went into this, and I remember Chantal saying to me, she literally had one of the lowest lows of her life the day before. And now she was having the highest high of her life. The whole scene was absolutely beautiful.
While you were in Fu, was that when you pushed on to try to get to that pyramid-shaped mountain?
So we spent 2 days reconnaissance. All these things started spiraling out of control and, you know, falling apart. And, you know, we were caught in a snowstorm at 17,000 feet. My gear bag with my climbing gear, the mule that was carrying it took off and it was lost. So all these things were coming apart and it kind of forced me to hunker down in that little village of Fu. But one of the things that was happening, I started to connect more and more with the locals. I was going through a bit of an identity crisis because it was my dream to go climb this thing. But as I was learning more about the customs and the culture, and the more I was kind of understanding, what is it that I'm here to do? Like, why am I here in this valley? And I was getting some clarity around that because everything inside of me still wanted to move forward. But everything outside of me was kind of guiding me in a different direction. I didn't know where, But I thought, you know, what I can do right now is choose to trust in that and kind of the unfolding events around me.
So that really is very Buddhist, isn't it? You had to sort of surrender one dream to maybe or maybe not. You didn't know at that point, right? Sort of surrendering to what will be.
Yeah. And sometimes life has a way of handing us things in different ways, right? You're absolutely right. Here in the West, we kind of strive a lot towards success. But then one of the things I often think about is success is just a moment in time, right? Kind of like climbing a mountain. There are very few times where I remember actually standing on a summit. But what I remember is what it took to get there. So that was one thing that was going through my mind. But at the same time, you're right. It's very difficult when you have this objective that you've been striving for years, and suddenly you have to kind of shift gears and not knowing where the path is ultimately leading.
How long were you in Foo before you decided, okay, it's time to go?
Yeah, we were there about 5 or 6 days, but because we had the extra time, we decided to spend a few extra days in the other little village. There's only two villages in this valley. Mm-hmm. One is Foo, and then the other one is Nar. And when we were in Nar, we caught wind that there's this little stone school there. So we get to this stone school, and there are these 17 kids, and this one little girl, 7-year-old girl, teaching the kids English numbers. But it wasn't long before the kids caught sight of our musician, Michael, and he had his guitar slung over his shoulder. And the kids had never seen a guitar, let alone heard one. So immediately they began to be interested in that, and he went up there and started teaching them this jazzed up rendition of Twinkle Twinkle Little Star. So the teacher, he got a little motivated, and he brought out this Nepali drum, and then he wanted the kids to dance in front of us one at a time. And he started with this little girl who had been so confidently teaching these numbers, like dance for these people now.
Boy, and talk about putting a kid on the spot.
We were all looking at it like, oh, okay, this is awkward and kind of, you know, what do we do here? And so she was just standing there, and she looked like a little petrified animal or something in the corner. Antal couldn't take it any longer, and she just kind of marched up next to this little girl and started doing her best impression of this Nepali dance. I mean, Chantal didn't know what she was doing. The little girl immediately forgot about everybody who was watching, and she was trying to copy Chantal's moves, and Chantal was saying, no, you teach me the dance. They were kind of dancing together, and it was just such a beautiful scene, and that's where I started thinking, wow, like, you know, maybe this is the reason why I didn't climb the mountain. So we just started asking the question to any local we could talk to, you know, what happens to the kids out here, you know? And when we found out the girl's name is Karma, if a little girl like Karma wants to study beyond what she would have access to in the village. And in the village at that time, they didn't have any books other than the scriptures in the monastery. They didn't have any access to outside information. So we thought, you know, what happens to these kids? And that's when we also decided, you know, we should meet with Karma's family and let's find out, let's have a conversation and see what, you know, what the plan is for Karma here. So we ended up finding their home, and the mom was still working in the fields when we got there, and the father was out with the yak, so he was 2 days away. But Karma, she brought us in by the hand, and she started laying out these mats for us to sit on. It's a little stone home, maybe the size of a typical North American bedroom, but a little stone, like a dung field stove in the middle, and put the kettle on. And she was doing all this while she was taking care of her 3-year-old sister. And then her mom comes in, very graceful, very beautiful woman. And she could probably been working in the fields for 12 hours, but she came in and she started making us tea. And we started having this conversation through broken translation. And basically we found out that for them, education for their girls is the biggest blessing that they could ever hope for. And so we said, okay, for as long as Karma would like to study, we asked Karma, you know, would you like to study? And she said, yes, as Karma is interested to study, we can help with that. And so we agreed with the parents to try and find the best school for Karma. And we knew that it had to be a boarding school, but we also knew that it had to be culturally aligned, you know, with her ethnicity. Because up there in the mountains, they're considered indigenous. Mm-hmm. They're more Tibetan, whereas most of Nepal is kind of Hindu and operating on the caste system. Indigenous or the mountain people on the caste are considered at the very, you know, kind of towards the bottom. So we knew that if Karma were to be placed in a government school, she could be at risk of significant racial discrimination. So we had to find a place that was safe for her and that was also culturally aligned, cultivating her own cultural, the Tibetan Buddhist roots. Yeah, so we left the village, and Chantal and I had no idea who would find something. Came back to Canada, kept searching, and I think it was about a month or over a month that we were searching, and we were almost giving up hope. But one day, Google kind of came to the rescue, and Chantal, she called me, and she said, Mike, I found this perfect school. It was It's called Sri Mangaldip SMD School for Himalayan Children. And it said at the top of the page, education for the lost children of the Himalaya. And we found out that it was founded by this Tibetan Lama. He had fled Tibet in the 50s, and he started this school specifically for these kids in these remote places that are so far out there that the kids just get forgotten about. So he started the school for them. This was all back in 2012, 2013. And we spent the next 7-8 years going back to Nepal every 8 to 10 months and getting to know Karma more. We brought her to her first day of class at the school. Her little sister, the one that she was taking care of in the village, Kemba, she was 3 years old at the time, but she was able to get into the school as well.
It's an incredible story. Pemba and Karma both came back to Canada, I know, for a year, and then they went back. I'm curious about what happened to them now. Where are they now?
They did come here, and then when we were getting ready to leave Nepal, they shut down the border for kids to leave the country. They wouldn't let them leave the country, even though they had visas for Canada, because exactly at that time, they were cracking down on all kinds of illegal activity that was happening at the airports, and child trafficking is actually a big problem over there. So anyway, we were able to get them here. They were here for a year. I mean, Chantal and I, we became parents essentially, you know, overnight. All of our minds were just expanding like crazy. If you imagine where they come from, this little village where they had never seen a bicycle, and then to get to Kathmandu, which is a big city, but, you know, very impoverished and lots of pollution. And then they come to this modern world of Vancouver. A lot of people call it the glass city here because all the buildings are so modern and glass steel. So, I mean, just seeing all these different things. But the interesting things that they found fascinating were streetlights. They'd never seen a streetlight before. And they thought, oh, wow. Or the ocean. I mean, they grew up in a landlocked vertical terrain. And so then, they did go back to Nepal to finish their education at SMD school. We wanted to set them up for success in both places, whether they were in Nepal, whether they choose to come here eventually. We want to make sure that they just know what the world is and they can dream bigger and have the choice. Anyway, because of COVID, they had to, the school had to close down for now. So now they're back in their village. But the village, in the meantime, they've had internet there. We can Skype and talk to the girls and we've been talking with them every week. And I feel somehow very blessed for them, just the richness of the experiences that they're getting at such a young age. Now, being back in the village with the lens that they have had in Kathmandu and in Canada, and then now being able to be back in their village, being immersed in that kind of that village education or village wisdom, you know, learning things that they would not learn over here. Their parents said to the girls, we have to go into the mountains now for 2 weeks. You have to look after the sheep and the goats and the cows and the horses and your baby nephew and yourselves and cook for yourselves for the next 2 weeks. And they would have been 15 and 11 at that time. But, you know, where else would that have happened? You know, the other day, Pemba said to me, her and Karma were bringing in the goats and the goats started acting funny. And they came around the corner and there was this snow leopard dragging one of the goats up the cliffside. And
goodness,
just a totally different world. I don't know where things are going now because of COVID, and I think no matter what happens, we'll be part of each other's lives. Where the girls are going to be, it's too early to tell, but we're going to just continue to be there for them and working with their parents in however way we can to make sure that these girls have choices, whatever they like to choose in life.
Crazy question. Do you ever think about the mountain, the pyramid-like mountain, and reviving that dream again? Or is that ship has sailed?
You know, I do think about it. You know, for me, climbing a mountain is such a personal experience. The most profound connection I've already found through these girls. So I no longer feel the need to climb this mountain.
That mountain is almost beside the point now, isn't it?
It guided me there.
Right, yeah, right. It served its purpose. It has a name, though, right? If I remember, it starts with a C.
Chaco. Found out afterwards that it has been climbed once by a Japanese party. It had a second attempt by a European party. One of the members fell off and died. And
oh, no.
As far as I know, it hasn't been attempted or climbed since.
Wow. Well, what a story. I can't wait to introduce your book to some of my friends and to listeners on WCBS, of course. Do you have any parting words that you want readers to take away from A Story of Karma?
Perhaps in this time of COVID, it's a way to experience a faraway place, you know, maybe travel through the pages and experience a place that we can't go to, or normally maybe we would go to anyway. But and more than that, I would say that story of love. And I hope that readers would experience some of the same deep human connection and love and joy that I experienced on this journey through these pages, perhaps in a time when we could use more of that these days.